From Pioneer 90.1 in Thief River Falls, this is Scrapbook, a collaborative project with Northwest Minnesota Historical Societies to share their county's history and promote awareness of the many fascinating places and things their counties have to offer. Scrapbook is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Here's host Glenn Broggett and his special guest on this edition of Scrapbook.
Greetings and welcome once again to Scrapbook, Beltrami County. I'm Glenn Broggett. Today we get into part three of Barry Babcock's look back at Henry Schoolcraft, Ozo Windeb, and the search for the headwaters of the Mississippi. Today we uncover the truth behind the legend of Ozo Windeb with Barry Babcock, today on Scrapbook.
There was an article that I came across some years ago, a rather obscure article that came out of the American Swedish Quarterly, a publication of the Swedish Institute in Minneapolis, written by an Emery Johnson. I believe it was in the 1980s. I got it from a former historian at Itasca State Park, that was entitled, Was Ozo Windeb a Swede? Now, Ozo Windeb, again, being Schoolcraft's guide in 1832. Well, I read this article with interest, and he sets a good argument, proposes a theory, and he sets the time schedule there, trying to make a plausible argument that Ozo Windeb wasn't an Indian. Well, who he says he was a man by the name of Jacob Falstrom. What we know today in Minnesota history, there's a statue of him in St. Paul. I believe it's at the intersection of Kellogg and some other major avenue in downtown St. Paul, dedicating that he had farmed that country before St. Paul became, and giving him credit as being the first Swede in Minnesota. The story goes way back to Sweden. In the late 1780s, he became an orphan. Both of his parents died for some reason, I don't know what it was. And he and an uncle took a trip to London, and there he became separated from his uncle, never to regain contact with his uncle again, and ended up as a lost orphan on the streets of London. He somehow ended up as a cabin boy on a Hudson Bay ship with a Lord Selkirk vessel headed for Hudson Bay. And at Hudson Bay, he got lost in the woods and was adopted by Native Americans, whether it was Ojibwe or Cree, I'm not sure. But he became one of these white Indians where he even forgot to speak his native tongue. Literally, I mean, he was raised by Native Americans. For every essence, he became a Native American. In fact, he was even found, he's documented that he was residing at the Red River settlement at the time of that Five Oaks Massacre, where Ojibwe and Métis killed a bunch of Scottish settlers that were brought over by Lord Selkirk. He wanted to start kind of a commune community there. He got brought over a bunch of these Scotsmen. And later it came to be what's now Winnipeg. But anyhow, then from there, Jacob Falstrom ended in Minnesota. He's found as working for the American Fur Company, which was headed by William Aiken then. And that would be in the Fond du Lac district of the American Fur Company, which would be almost all of Minnesota, the northern part. The northern two-thirds of Minnesota and a small portion of northwestern Wisconsin was included in the Fond du Lac department. It was one of the largest departments in the American Fur Trade, and prior to that, in the Northwest Fur Company. But it was very important. This was a big deal for fur trading here. This was all still, at this period of time, the 1820s into the 1830s and prior to that, was all Indian country here. This was completely Indian country. There was no land acquisition treaties had been made. The fur traders were here only at the behest of the Native Americans. And whites then were only interested then in furs. Between the white fur traders and the Native Americans, it was a business relationship. There was good and bad on both sides, but basically the Indians were the procurement end and the fur traders were the middlemen, the merchants. And it was a system that worked fairly well. There were things that weren't good. There was black marks to it, such as the trading of alcohol and so forth. But anyhow, that's where Jacob Falstrom ended up working for the American Fur Company then. And it was noted that he resided on Star Island on Cass Lake, which is on the Beltrami side of Cass Lake. Approximately the southern half of Cass Lake is in Cass County. The northern half is in Beltrami County, and probably the northern seven-eighths of Star Island is in Beltrami. Anyhow, that's where Jacob Falstrom married Marguerite Bonga, the sister of this George that I mentioned earlier that was a interpreter for Cass, who by the 1830s ended up living on Leech Lake, and also was mentioned in Jacob Vredenburg Brouwer's book that George Bongo was one of the white men that was at the headwaters prior to Schoolcraft's arriving there. But bear in mind that Bongo was half black and half Ojibwe. There wasn't a drop of white blood in him. Anyhow, his sister Marguerite married Jacob Falstrom, and it just seems there's so many pieces of the puzzle here that are hard to put together. But this Falstrom and this Bonga family were so integral in the history of this headwaters country, it just lends credence to the fact that there are so many people that are important to our history, not just here at Beltrami, this North Central Minnesota area, but Minnesota as a state, that were behind the scenes in so many things that happened that were of monumental importance then to this region that wasn't a state then, was still part of the territory of Michigan and Wisconsin.
You've been listening to Scrapbook, a Pioneer 90.1 original. This edition of Scrapbook was recorded at the Pioneer 90.1 studios located on the campus of Northland Community and Technical College, Thief River Falls. Additional episodes and content from this and other Pioneer 90.1 original programs available at radionorthland.org. Scrapbook is made possible through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.